Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Congressman Stephen Lynch has a knack for winning special elections. He's the son of an iron worker from South Boston who won a special election to the state Senate in 1995. Then in 2001, he won another special election to represent the Massachusetts 8th District in the House of Representatives, where he's been ever since. Now, Stephen Lynch is in the fray with Congressman Ed Markey and a host of GOP candidates in the special election to fill the Senate seat vacated by Secretary of State John Kerry. Congressman Lynch joins us now in the studio to talk more about his life, his politics, and his Senate campaign. Congressman Stephen Lynch, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Meghna. It's good to be with you.
It's terrific to have you. Listeners, what is your question for Senate candidate Stephen Lynch? What issues matter to you? Stephen Lynch has been called the most conservative Democrat or the most conservative member of Massachusetts' all-Democratic congressional delegation. Does that matter to you? This is your chance to ask him yourself. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Now, Congressman Lynch, I wonder if we could just start with that question. I mean, you've been frequently described as the most conservative member of the Massachusetts delegation. But I wonder, in your own words, what kind of Democrat would you describe yourself as being?
Well, I think I've heard that charge before. But remember, describing me as the most conservative member of the Massachusetts delegation is like calling me the slowest of the Kenyans in the Boston Marathon. You know, you still finish ahead of everybody else. So I'm a moderate. If you look at National Journal, probably does the best tracking of members of Congress. They measure 435 members of Congress from left to right. And I'm in the what they describe as the liberal end of the moderate range. I come in about 161 of 435. So,
well, before
I like to describe myself as a common sense Democrat. That's okay. What I like to say.
Before we go any further, a little technical detail that I failed to check during the break. I want to be sure that you have your volume turned up on your headset there.
Okay.
There, now you can you hear a little better now?
I can hear you much better.
That's
good.
So live radio, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault at all. It's my fault for not having checked. But so on that front, I mean, even given what you said, do you think in Massachusetts today it's a tougher sell in a general election being a centrist Republican or the type of Democrat that you describe?
Well, I am who I am. I'm not going to change that. I mean, I've been a Democrat all my life. It's a very different – there's a world of difference between a moderate Republican these days and a moderate Democrat. First of all, we're endangered, I think, both groups, because of the wave elections we've had and the polarizations that's there. I think, you know, moderates on both sides have been diminishing in numbers over the past few years. But look, I think my positions, you know, if you look at them, I mean, I get an F from the NRA. I get an A from the AFL-CIO. I get great marks from Sierra Club, A rating. The Nurses Union, you know, has recently endorsed me. So, you know, I think you're known by the people who are with you as well as some of those who are against you.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the people who have been very vocally with you in the past. You're a former iron worker yourself, and you, in fact, at one time were the leader of the Iron Workers Local 7 in Boston.
That's right.
And from their union hall, that's where you announced your bid for Senate.
That's correct.
So you know where this is going, because just this weekend, the AFL-CIO, the big umbrella union organization in the state, actually declined to throw its weight behind either you or Congressman Markey.
Right.
Now, a lot of political observers say that that actually is more of a setback for you than it is for Congressman Markey. Do you see it that way? I mean, you've described yourself as, in the past I've seen you said, you know, ask any member of Congress who's the labor guy in the House, and it's me. I'm proud to wear that label.
Right. Well, you need to be clear about what the rules were on Friday. 44 unions endorsed me, and two endorsed Mr. Markey. However, I did not get past the two-thirds requirement for the endorsement because many unions have a policy against endorsing in the Democratic primary when they have two members of Congress who have favorable records. So, but I'm happy. I'm really happy to have the nurses union, the firefighters union, the laborers, the carpenters, you know, the police, the fire. All of those unions are actively working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm delighted with the result. But yes, it was not. I was not able to climb the hurdle of two thirds.
Why do you think that is? I mean, you are a union member. You were a union leader. You said you've received an A plus from union organizations throughout your career.
I'm actually one of the few card carrying members of the union. But you have to realize that they have rules among these unions that they don't get involved in the Democratic primary. And
well, they have in the past, though. I mean, I know there's some that they've sat out on.
Not really. Even in 2001, when I did get the two thirds, there was nobody else that could challenge that ability to get that. So 44-2, though, that's we call that a spanking in the
in
labor
terms
union.
Of individual.
Yeah,
unions,
I'm talking about unions that are going to get involved. There are 44 unions that stepped up and said, we are with you 100%. There were two that said the same thing about my challenger. So I'm really happy about that. I don't know if there's other way. You can try to spin it some other way, but I just know that those 44 unions are out there working for me today.
Well, I'm not trying to spin it in any way. I mean, I'm just looking at things that political observers and even you yourself have said in the past. And I think you're saying something similar now that, you said in the past to the Globe that when a lot of these unions are statewide, they're on the ground. So once they're supporting you, you have an organic organization that basically rises up. It's hugely important.
It is.
Now, on that front, I mean, for example, how important is it to you to have that ground game when Congressman Markey has perhaps, since he has a longer career in Congress and, $3 million in the bank for his campaign here, how essential is it you to have any kind of help you can get on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, all of that is important, especially with the statewide unions, as you've mentioned. You know, there are nurses in every single city and town. There are firefighters in every single city and town. There are police officers in every single city and town. There are letter carriers, your postal letter carriers. So having those people, those individuals who are also soccer coaches, baseball coaches, hockey moms in their own neighborhoods and cities and towns as leaders, I think it's a huge advantage that we have. You're right. I have a big disadvantage money-wise, but in a way, in this election, and I've done a couple of these before, it's hard to purchase the election. It really is hard. It's hard. You don't have enough time, and there's not enough money to really saturate the airwaves like, say, in the last race where you had, I think it was a total of $80 million pumped in. We might have one-tenth of that in this between both parties. So, I mean, both candidates in the primary.
Right, and the primary is slated, for the end of April? So
right.
It's coming up really quickly.
58 days, yeah.
Yeah. Listeners, I'm speaking with Congressman Stephen Lynch. He is a Democratic candidate for the special election to fill the U.S. Senate seat vacated by now Secretary of State John Kerry. This is your chance to ask him a question. What is your question for Stephen Lynch, and what kind of senator would you like to see serving on behalf of the state of Massachusetts in Washington? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Congressman Lynch, before we leave the question of or the issue of unions altogether, because there's a lot about your philosophy and your history and your career so far that I'd like to dig into, but I think a way in which to do that is in reading sort of the reaction and the support and the perspective that union members across state have of you and your candidacy here, I read in the Globe that a gentleman named Joseph Carlson, who's president of the Central Massachusetts Labor Council, he pointed to the fact that you did vote against the Affordable Care Act and that you have a long history of being an anti-abortion politician. He said, quote, those issues are problematic for Stephen Lynch. They work great in South Boston, but once you get out of Southie, it's not where the Commonwealth is. And I wonder what your reaction is to that.
Well, 92% of my district is outside of South Boston. 92%. It has been for the last 10 years. So that's a very small piece of – and the other thing is among 435 members of Congress, I finished sixth in vote total in the last election. So obviously I've been able to transcend just the neighborhood of South Boston. I've been able to transcend different issues. I do want to point out, while some classify me as anti-abortion, you know, I have never attacked Roe v. Wade, so I have not been extreme on that position. I don't see attacking Roe v. Wade as part of any solution. I have, you know, I would not support a nominee to the Supreme Court who would support that position. I think that would be very radical. I have supported funding for Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. I have stood on the floor of the House, and you know, my approach has been one that we can reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies, then we can reduce the number of abortions. So, it's you know, my position I think has been, you know, pragmatic on that point.
Well, pragmatic and perhaps more textured than other politicians, because, for example, if I recall correctly, in 2001, you led an effort to ban abortions that took place after 24 weeks. And at one time, you also opposed attempts to create a buffer zone to keep protesters away from abortion clinics. Now, a number of people look at your as you just proclaimed, your support for Roe v. Wade as maybe a recent addition to your perspective on abortion in America. And I'm wondering, like, what's driving that evolution, if it is at all an evolution?
I don't think it's an evolution. I have never taken a position against Roe v. Wade. I do want to point out, however, that my opponent in this race has taken some pretty hard positions against Roe v. Wade, and you might want to explore that. The vote on the driveway amendment was a free speech amendment to allow people to come somewhere close to a clinic and not have their voices silenced. So that's what that was. It was on the fringes of that issue. It wasn't one that was core to the right of women to have access.
Mm. Now, I know you might forgive me if it sounds like I'm pressing this issue. I'm not. It's just that I know in the past you and other politicians have said you don't enjoy the fact that abortion is used as a litmus test in political races. And I take your point. But on the other hand, I'm thinking that we've also come through a year where in various elections across the country, women's reproductive health was used as a wedge issue for a variety of reasons. And so, sure. You know, I'm wondering, it seems as if Washington itself is demanding that abortion be a form of a litmus test for political viability.
Yeah, I think that's part of it in some jurisdictions, Meghna. I also think that that the tone of the discussion, you talk about a textured position on abortion. I think that anything that doesn't fit on a bumper sticker these days is textured, is nuanced. You have to adopt the language and the narrow descriptions of positions in order to be either, quote, you know, pro-life or pro-choice. I don't print the bumper stickers. I don't claim to be an expert on church teaching. I really don't. I am an expert on what I believe, and I know there's people that are just saying, look, damn it, just pick a bumper sticker, and that should be your position. And, you know, it's a profound issue, and, you know, I've had votes that have made both sides disappointed, but, you know, that's the way it is. This is the way I feel about things.
Well, if you're an expert in what you believe, do you believe that fetuses are viable, I mean, a human life?
At some point.
Or legal, a legal person, I should say?
Well, you know, I think that certainly Roe v. Wade recognizes at some point that late-term abortions are something that present a position of state interest very late in the pregnancy. It also, I think, federal court law, even that supporting Roe v. Wade, says that you know, there is a state interest there, and that, you know, absent some issue of rape, incest, or the health of the mother, that the federal court recognizes that that presents a different situation.
Hmm. Let's take a quick call here. There's a lot of people who want to speak with you briefly. Anne is calling from Boston on Beacon Hill. Anne, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Anne. I live on Beacon Hill in Congressman Lynch's congressional district. I voted for you your very first time on September 11th, 2001, when you ran for the special seat to replace John Joseph Moakley. I've been a supporter of you. I like the fact that you're moderate in your beliefs. And I told the lady, and this is true, my big issue is there's a health insurance protection bill in the House. It's been in the House for a couple of years.
Anne?
No, I don't. I'm listening to you, and there's nothing on. You can't hear me?
I can hear you.
We can hear you, Anne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can hear you.
You were talking directly to the congressman, and you were talking about the Health Insurance Protection Act that's in the House. What's your question for him, Anne, if I might ask?
Well, my question is, would you support that? I'm not going to go into the details because they told me not to, but basically it does what John Joseph Moakley did to protect pension portability rights back in the 80s after the phone company broke up. I used to work for the phone company.
Mm. Right. Anne, let me let the congressman answer. Thank you for your call.
Anne, thank you so much. I have to confess, though, I'm not sure what this particular bill does.
Yeah.
I am a Joe Moakley Democrat, but that's a very vague answer. I'd have to look at it before I could tell you for certain. I do want to say that, what the Affordable Care Act, insurance issues are extremely precarious, and we're going to have to keep on working on those. I read another story today in the Globe about the prices continuing to rise, and a lot of people are very concerned about, the Affordable Care Act as it phases in, because we did not get at the price issue, did not get at the cost issue. So, I have grave concerns about that.
Mm. Let's take another call. Deborah's calling from Billerica. You're on the air, Deborah.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Representative Lynch, there is a broad scientific consensus that climate change is caused by human beings, that it will be a very critical, devastating crisis for human beings and Americans, and that only by getting rapidly off of fossil fuels can we get our hands around this.
Deborah, I'm wondering what your question is for the congressman.
Okay, what I want to know is what Representative Lynch would do about it, what policies he'll support.
Oh, thank you for your call, Deborah. Congressman Lynch.
Thank you. Well, I think the rapid adoption of alternative renewable sources of energy is the answer. The speed at which we can do that will depend on how much of our resources financially that we'll push in that direction. I honestly think that if we can place taxes on fossil fuels, every type, we can, pour over those taxes. I mean, the taxes, of course, are going to create a disincentive for use of those fuels. And if we can pour over those taxes and target them towards entities that are actually looking at developing those and advancing those renewable fuel sources and the technologies that underpin them, then I think that's a way of getting at this. I also think that the government can do a lot more in terms of discouraging overuse of fossil fuels while encouraging wind power, solar, hydroelectric power as well. So I think there's we can do a lot through the tax code. I know it doesn't sound sexy, but we can do a lot there to get at the pernicious problem of climate change. And, obviously we need to do everything we can to encourage our international partners because if China is pushing out a new coal-fired plant every month, obviously we're never going to catch up.
Congressman Lynch, in the last couple minutes we have, I'm wondering if I could ask you, why is it that you want to run for Senate? And the reason why particularly I'm curious about that is, right now partisanship is at an all-time high in Washington. I mean, we're in the middle of still trying to understand what the fallout from the sequester might be and all the sniping and wrangling that we hear. Much of it, in fact, comes from the House side of things. And given how you described yourself, what kind of Democrat you described yourself as, I'm wondering why you think you might be more effective in the Senate than in the House, where maybe someone who is a little less dogmatic along party lines might be more effective.
Well, you know, it takes two to tangle. But look, I see my country in crisis right now. I think we're at a tipping point. And I think I will have much more impact in a body of 100 than I do of a body of 435. And the ability of any Democrat in the House right now, in the face of the type of Republican House membership that we're dealing with right now, these are not your garden variety Republicans like we're used to dealing with in Massachusetts. These are in many cases, Tea Party Republicans who don't see compromise as being a strength. They don't see, you know, sitting down and working through the issues as something that should be favored. They see it as they see that as failure if they sit down across from some of our members and actually try to work through these problems. So the temper in the House is extremely challenging for anyone of any stripe, any Democrat of any stripe. And I think that only the electorate can in that House can really bring us to a closer point. We're down by, I think, 35 seats right now. But look, here's what I bring to the United States Senate. It has become a very elite club. All lifelong career politicians and multimillionaires. They have a very, very narrow view of the world and very narrow life experience, which is quite common throughout. You know, if I go to the United States Senate, I would be the first union member ever elected to the United States Senate in the 237-year history of this country. I will be the only one in the United States Senate who has strapped on a pair of work boots for 18 years and had a career, working and growing up in public housing for 15 years. Mm-hmm. All those experiences will be new. Standing in an unemployment line. I worked at the GM plant in Framingham, Massachusetts. I know what happened to that plant when we adopted NAFTA and they moved U.S. plants, union plants over the border into Mexico, non-union plants, low-wage plants. I grew up in public housing. I don't look at public housing or affordable housing as a government program. I look at it as my home. I know what trade agreements do to cities and towns and to workers when they're offshore overseas. I know what it's like to stand in an unemployment line when you don't know where your next job is coming from, when your bills are piling up and your family's waiting on you. I look at all those issues much, much differently than the average member of the United States Senate, and I think that's a new perspective, and it is shameful. It is shameful that I would be I'm not saying that every senator, needs to have some type of real-world experience in the lives that average families do, but I'm just saying one should be.
Well, on that note, what do you think the greatest challenges that your campaign has yet to overcome in these 2 months or so before the Democratic primary?
Well, here's the deal. When Ed Markey announced his candidacy, the Democratic Senate Committee came out. They've got $40 million in their super PAC. They endorsed him. Senator Bennett from Colorado runs that outfit. He got a quasi-endorsement, I'd say an endorsement from John Kerry. So they were immediately trying to clear the field. So that type of endorsement from the Democratic establishment in Washington, D.C. is very, very powerful, very tough to overcome. But I happen to believe that the Massachusetts voters should have the ability to pick their U.S. senator. And, my candidacy is trying to send a message that the people of Massachusetts are quite capable of picking their own U.S. senator, thank you very much. And I think we also send a message around the country that are doing this right to work stuff and anti-union and anti-worker stuff, trying to beat down workers. I think Massachusetts could send a loud message to those people. Hey, we're going to send the only union member United States senator in the country, and we want him to work on behalf of average workers and continue that good work.
Well, Congressman Stephen Lynch is running for the special election for U.S. Senate here in Massachusetts. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us today, Congressman.
Thank you so much, Meghna.
Listeners, continue this conversation online at our website, radioboston.org. And stick with us. When we come back, we'll ask, how can you balance human rights in the era of super multinational corporations? This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll be right back.